Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, recording on Thursday, June 19th on a West Coast evening. I'm Vlad Sedler at RotoGut, joined by Boom62, Jason Anthony. Jay, what is new in the world of baseball for you?
What up, Vlad? It's exciting Northern California news up here in Giants territory, getting our boy Rafael Devers. Came out of left field or third base or DH, no puns intended there. But as a Giants fan, just, you know, beyond stoked to get that kind of bat in the lineup. Never going to sign that kind of guy in free agency for us. So being able to trade for him and have him for 8 years and makes the team a little more legit. So I'm excited. Fantasies, the struggles, injuries, a lot of people coming back. So there's some optimism, but, you know, it's kind of that game. As soon as somebody comes back on your team, you lose somebody. So it's just keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah, your Giants getting Rafael Devers, a great move. Very impressed what Director of Baseball Operations over there, Buster Posey, has been doing and has been building. By the way, it was interesting to me when Twitter was, shocked that Devers came into that press conference. It's like, oh, I'll play first base. I'll do anything for the team. Would it really be that shocking? I mean, wouldn't that be kind of a conversation that was probably had and something he was already open to and agreed to, like probably with his agent before he came over there?
You know, I wonder about that, how much behind the scenes conversation there is with the player, because obviously there's a lot of conversations about trades and how close do they actually get. I think it's much more of an FU to the Red Sox and their fans and that organization about how he got treated at the end than it is, being a super accommodating for the Giants. It seemed like the communication really broke down at the end for the Red Sox when they signed Bregman. And, you know, he's like, well, if FU. And so they just kind of put him at DH and let him go. So I don't think he's going to play a lot of first base initially, but I can see him working his way into it with Bryce Eldridge coming up, who's not a great first baseman at this point. They need one of them to be able to play first base because they both can't DH. So I would say it wasn't surprising, but I don't think I would say that the Giants knew 100% for sure that he was willing to do that before trading for him.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the way you said it, like kind of a big FU to the Red Sox, that really does make sense, right? Like everything with Bregman, because from everything I remember over all these years, Rafael Devers was never considered a diva. I don't ever remember him ever being an issue. And then in the offseason, you know, I was obviously a little bit of a fade on him outright fade, really. And it was more having to do with the shoulders and then, you know, a little bit of a drama, miscommunication there. But I also felt like there was a big part on the Red Sox. But to me, it just seems like, yeah, I mean, like sometimes you just get disenchanted, disenfranchised, whatever it is, like, you know, like, hey, just screw these guys. I'm over it. And that's the case. And I have a feeling that he may just play ball and be nice and comfortable there once he's settled in.
Yeah, you and I were both fades on him. I think in one of my main events, I passed on him in the fifth round for Wilson Contreras, and I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. But it was more the drama about the position, and then, you know, like there was the injury recovery. So he's been obviously incredible ever since the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season. I've been one of the best hitters in the league. You know, it usually takes a guy a little bit to acclimate into a new city, trying to show off for his teammates. But a couple of Giants, I guess, had played with him before, and they said he just wants to be out there every day playing. So, like, to your point about being a diva, it really had not surfaced as a sports fan. And you know, I don't dislike the Red Sox. I was not a fan of how he handled that situation with the Red Sox and kind of threw Christian Campbell under the bus, you know, kind of questioned him why he was willing to do something for the Red Sox. You know, it's not how you want to mentor a young player as a veteran and a star in the league. But it was interesting with the press conference having Barry Bonds there and Devers saying how nervous he was to have even talked to him. So it just, they're all humans and, you know, they all have their own idols and fans. So I'm excited.
Yeah. And so it's interesting because, the Giants are in the hunt, right? Like there were 3 or 4 games back of the Dodgers. They lost to the Guardians, I believe. They beat the Guardians, right?
They lost two. They won this afternoon 2-1. Another offensive explosion.
Okay. Yes. Yes. That's right. And it's, I mean, they're in the hunt. They have great pitching. They have a phenomenal bullpen. The offense isn't the most exciting in the world, but it is very solid. I mean, it's the best unit I've seen out there in a while. And obviously Devers really accentuates that. Elliot Ramos has really come into his own. You know, at some point you hope Jung Hoo Lee gets going. I wanted to ask you about Lee because I hadn't really realized with my Lee colored glasses on just how poorly he's been hitting. But before we do, just kind of sticking with the corners, Wilmer Flores, he's essentially been the DH for a very long time. Last time he played first base was all the way, like basically over a month ago. And now that Devers is there and he's DH'd and hit third in his first three games, Wilmer Flores has, you know, taken a little bit of a backseat. He sat against the two righties. He, you know, came in and got, I think, a pinch hit double. And then he played first base, hitting cleanup against the lefty. So Wilmer Flores is among the RBI leaders, top 12, I believe, in the league right now. But just is his playing time kind of like, is he going to just be like a left, you know, a short side platoon guy? Like, how do they get his bat in the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any scenario that he's beyond a short side platoon with the defensive liabilities that Wilmer has and then Devers has. You know, they're not going to put Devers over at third base with Chapman's injury. He hasn't played it all season. They might move into it, but Matt Chapman's already starting to do baseball activities, so hopefully he's back, you know, within a week or two. The lineups can obviously look really different with Chapman back with Devers in it. Unless they can get Rafael to play first base, which would anybody be really surprised with the Red Sox coming to town this weekend that if he started at first base on Friday? You know, as an extra, you know, kind of jab at the Red Sox. But that's kind of Wilmer's only path to playing significantly is if they can get Devers in the field, which I don't see happening. So you're looking at a short side platoon with Dominic Smith right now, which is not the most exciting combo, but Dom Smith has actually been serviceable, and you know Wilmer's been really good when playing this year.
Yeah, I mean Dominic Smith, always, you know, what is dead may never die, bounces back with another team, hitting the middle of the lineup, fourth and fifth against righties. He's a top 30 hitter over the last 10 days. In my most recent column, I kind of stated that I don't know if he's going to be there, like if they make the playoffs, if he's on that roster, if he even makes the, you know, there will might come a time where he just is completely cold, maybe sometime in August and they cut him. And then, I don't know, Casey Schmidt obviously has been quite serviceable. He's been covering third base. But then when Matt Chapman is back, I think Schmidt falls back into a bench role. And then, you know, Jung Hoo Lee, it's really interesting because, I mean, he got off to a really hot start in that those first 5 weeks. The guy was hitting 320, 150 plus, WRC plus. And then since he's hitting around like 220 and 84 WRC plus, really struggling. Like what is going on with Lee? Any hope for a bounce back for all of my shares, my highest rostered player?
Yeah, and I remember talking to you, you know, a little over a month ago about him winning a batting title, hitting over 300, you know, the Luis Soraya's light. I think the skills are there. It looked like from looking under the hood, he really started the press in May. His walk rate plummeted to 3.5%, which is well below his career norms or his short career. But so far in June, that's bounced way back up to 15.9. If you look at a pretty obvious correlation with why he struggled, the BABIP first 5 weeks was 351, and then May it's 232, and June is 217. He's looked really sharp the last week or two as well and just getting really unlucky. Needs to start hitting for some more power. I mean, a pull ground ball hitter is not going to be great, so he needs to start lifting the ball a little more, hopefully going to the opposite field. But I'm very optimistic that batting average is going to rise again, and he's going to be a valuable asset to your team. To what level, I don't know, but he's going to be solid.
Man, talking all these Giants in a fantasy scenario is interesting. One guy that is no longer a Giant went over to Boston in that Devers deal. Kyle Harrison sent immediately to AAA, kind of work on kind of, you know, getting acclimated within a new system, work on, you know, his pitch mix. What are you doing with Kyle Harrison? Do you have any shares, and what are you planning to do with him this weekend?
You know, I'm a Kyle Harrison fanboy. I think there's a lot of skill there. You know, he was just over a year away removed from being the best left-handed prospect in baseball. Strikeouts are there. Velocity's back. I just read something, and I don't know if it's true or not, so I'd have to verify it, but he's a week and a half away from the Red Sox getting an extra year of control, being in the minors. So that could add up why he's in the minors. They obviously have Hunter Dobbins pitching pretty well right now, but there's not a lot of great pitchers on that Red Sox team other than Garrett Crochet that's going to hold Harrison down. So I am a strong hold on Harrison for at least the next 2 weeks, and kind of following what they're doing with him in the minors, pitch count, what his walk rate looks like, strikeout rate. But I'm planning on him being up in the next 2 to 3 weeks. What about yourself?
I'm in the same boat. Thankfully, I'm in a scenario where the two teams I have them on, two 15 teamers, I can afford to hold them. And so that, I think that is what I'm going to do, dropping them back off into the player pool. And then, I mean, obviously everyone is shorter on money. I believe mid 300s is about on average what people have. And I mean, these guys aren't going for as big a bucks, and looking at Fab coming up this weekend, as far as now is concerned, it doesn't look like there are going to be any, you know, super massive high spends. But I just don't want to throw him back in the player pool where I'm going to be tempted to try to, you know, get at him again, especially if he comes up, you know, randomly on a Sunday and has a tremendous start and kind of, you know, gets everyone excited about him again. So I think he's definitely capable of it. Of course, the ballpark shift and the division and league. I mean, listen, the NL West is actually, maybe the ballparks aren't all ideal for hitters. I mean, a lot of pitcher parks there. But it's still the best division in baseball so far. I mean, it's been, you know, better than the AL East, right?
Yeah. I mean, Arizona's got the best offense in the league again, and they just murder. I mean, I guess the Cubs are better than them this year, but Arizona, San Diego, Dodgers, Giants, you know, it's a really strong division. And then you throw Coors in there with the Colorado Pace Eaters. It's not a fun division for the pitchers. So, I don't think it's necessarily the big scary AL East. I don't think it's the case anymore.
I will correct you on one thing. Arizona is one of the top offenses, but the Dodgers are actually still my boys, number one.
There you go, Vlad. You know, it could not come out of my mouth, so I'm glad you had to throw that in there.
By the way, Hunter Goodman on the Rockies is coming in top 25, second round value on the player raters, which is pretty interesting. What a season.
And president of the Hyesung Kim fan club earned more opportunities. So we're going to see a lot more of our boy, Mr. Kim, in L.A. playing. It looks like center field, which is interesting. It just shows how good Tommy Edman is at second base.
Yes. Yeah. Tommy Edman. One thing with him, he's not running. He's only got 3 stolen bases on 4 attempts, hitting there at the bottom of the lineup. Hasn't, you know, really been hitting home runs as much since he was hurt not long ago. But yeah, Andy Paez, who's been one of the best hitters in baseball over the last couple of weeks, he's moved over to a corner field. And Michael Conforto has been the guy losing playing time. Michael Conforto, by the way, has been one of the unluckiest hitters in baseball. Maybe perhaps if he's given the opportunity, kind of would get going again. Hey, maybe he needs glasses like Muncy, you know, who knows? But yeah, it looks like Hyesung Kim is getting every opportunity there at center field, at least against righties.
Yeah, we're 2.5 months into the season. At some point, you just aren't very good, and Conforto's been a huge bust for them. Unlucky he has been, but man, he's been bad for them. So I think this was overdue. And Kim has earned it. But then, you know, Dave Roberts comes out and says that, and then the first game that he says that, he pitches Kiki for him in the 6th inning. So, you know, go ahead, Dave Roberts, you be you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Anything else happening news-wise or in the division?
Yeah, just a couple tidbits. Really not much actionable for NFBC, but Carson Wisenhunt, the Giants' now top pitching prospect, is one step closer to getting in the rotation. One injury, or if Justin Verlander decides to retire mid-year because he's just not that good anymore, he could be an impact arm coming up. And now there is an injury question I have for you, and I have a couple big shares I have to make some decisions on. Gabriel Moreno on Arizona went to the IL with a bruised hand. Doesn't seem serious, but is he good enough to hold and carry a third catcher or take a zero and 15s, in your opinion, or is he a drop and moving on?
I guess it depends what's there on the wire, because a lot of times, I mean, you're just staring at a Danny Jansen and you just know that it's probably a bad idea, and especially if they are away from their minor league park, as they're going to be next week. But I mean, listen, hey, maybe a little Austin Wins action, you know, for a little bit of rental. I'm not opposed to dropping Gabriel Moreno. Listen, if it's a hand, it's bruised, sure. I mean, it's not like a broken wrist or anything. It's so hard to take. It's not, let me put it this way. It's not hard, I don't think. It's not a bad thing to take a catcher, take a zero at a catcher. So I'm not opposed to it. I think if you're in a 12 teamer, for example, in that scenario, he's a pretty easy drop.
It's the same here. So I got to see who's available in the leagues and what to do. Carrying third catcher is just brutal, especially for the payoff. You know, Moreno has 5 homers and 20 RBIs, so not been great, but a batting average asset as a catcher is hard to find. So one question I have for you that's not on the outline before we get into the pitchers returning. I didn't get a chance to ask you this last week, was Yuri Perez versus Jacob Mizorowski. I heard that you were team Yuri. I want to understand where you are. Are you excited? Did you get any Yuri shares in Fab? Are you down on, we'll call him the Miz? I know people don't like that nickname, but I like it. So where are you at with those two?
So I had Yuri Perez higher for an average bid projection and for what I recommended above Mizorowski. And I actually was a little surprised. You know, you kind of stay in my bubble. I don't really read other stuff, so I didn't know where the market was on him, but I don't know why. I just didn't think that Miz was going to go for more, and I understand why with Yuri. Was, you know, that first rehab start, I'm sorry, so he had 8 beautiful rehab starts and looked really good, and then, you know, kind of like, you know, not surprising, comes up to the majors, struggled in that first outing. The second outing actually looked pretty good. Watch the start. He just didn't have strikeouts. And I heard people talking about, well, he might, you know, the pitch count and, you know, coming off Tommy John and all, listen, and they're all valid concerns, including the fact that he plays on the Marlins, where he's not going to get a lot of run support, whereas the Miz would get a ton for the Brewers. My main reasoning for Yuri was that I feel more secure with him within the rotation. And I felt like both are just as close as injury risks to one another, because they throw damn hard. Like we talked about with DeGrom, right? When we were in the offseason, we were talking about how DeGrom is almost in a lot, some ways safer than some of these other guys that we've seen gone down who throw 100 with arm injuries. You know, Miz has been healthy, but like, man, it's just some wicked arm action there. And it sometimes just like a ticking time bomb. What it comes down to is like the way they just kind of let Logan Henderson go, and the fact they have so much depth in the rotation, I had no idea whether Mizorowski was going to even stick around beyond a couple of starts. And I still don't know. And the biggest kicker, the guy's got a 14% walk rate in the minor. So that was kind of the main reason.
Yeah. All very valid points. I mean, the Brewers have Brandon Woodruff, Logan Henderson, Nestor Cortez, all with Woodruff and Nestor coming back, and Logan Henderson deserves to be there. You know, you don't have a lot of, you know, murderer's row in that rotation besides Freddy Peralta. You know, Patrick's been good. Quinn Priester's been really good. But I just, for some reason, when the coach came out and said they're putting Mizorowski in the rotation and moving Aaron Civale to the bullpen, it sounded like he's their dude. And so that's kind of what made me kind of bump him above Yuri. It's interesting, though. I just don't love him throwing 101, 102. I'd much rather see 99. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's got to be subconscious. You know, Yuri coming up, he was the Sandy Alcantara clone, right? Every they look alike, they throw alike. And I'm just wondering, you know, subconsciously, if Sandy's struggles this year led me to lowering Yuri's bids coming off the injury and, you know, coming back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being on the Marlins, lack of wins. So I prioritized Mizorowski. I got him in three places, one on accident. It was just to keep him on his bid. And so fingers crossed, I think if he can stay healthy, he could be a monster. But I did get Yuri in another big spot. So I'm a fan of them both.
And the other thing is that this is already now becoming the time of year when a lot of people are low on money and you just get surprises. You got to put those keep them honest bids because you never know what kind of surprise you might get. I think I got a, you know, Yuri where my pitching was strong, but I had like 400 plus and I think I bid like 51 or something and I got him. And I think there was not even a backup bid, which is really weird. So you never know, you know, what box of chocolates you're going to get. So I think it's a good idea to just kind of keep throwing stuff out there, even if you don't really need a guy. If you got a little bit of money, just even throw a few dollars. You never know what you might get.
Maybe we'll have a little side bet rest of season. Who's better for a drink in Vegas next year?
All right, let's do it.
I'm game. All right. Somebody note that down.
Yes, write that down. Quinn Priester, by the way, just some insane stuff. Over his last, what is it? Eight appearances or eight starts, pretty much. He's come in as a, you know, after a opener a couple of times. Last eight starts, he's 4-2. He's got a 29-10 KBB and a 2.23 ERA. So he's been really, really good and you know, kind of come into fruition what, you know, some of those changes he made in the offseason with Boston before he was traded over to the Brewers.
Yeah, not to rub it in, Red Sox fans, but just another good player traded away.
All right, some pitchers that we have coming back in soon, I guess. Just guys we should keep tabs on, take a look at it. You know, not all these guys are 100% rostered, so maybe see if some of them are available in your league. But Shota Imanaga for the Cubs, he's been out for quite a while with a hamstring, about a month or plus. He just made his third rehab start, and he is expected to be back middle of next week. You got him and then Hunter Green, the ace of the Reds. He is about to embark on a rehab as well, likely one start. He's been dealing with the growing injury, the back thing, so he might be back sometime, maybe about a week from now.
That Hunter Green news was really strange. The fact he went for a second opinion on his groin. I don't know if it's back or growing, but anytime you see a second opinion, they don't like the first, and then all of a sudden he's coming back on a rehab. So that one worked out a little goofy timeline wise. And you know, Shota, I'm excited because you know I see hammy, and I'm as having a couple shares. I like hammy a lot more than triceps or elbow or shoulder. So yep. I'm excited to get him back. A couple other guys, Nathan Eovaldi, tricep, we just talking about, through a bullpen session, likely back early next week. The beat writers have been way off on Eovaldi. I have a couple of shares, and I actually started him last week because I was in a pinch, and because I was reading that he was going to face the White Sox, and then it came out he was just throwing a bullpen. So you want to talk about being, you know, not close, because there's a decent chance he might have to even do a rehab outing. So keep a close eye on that. He's been amazing this year. Hopefully he can stay healthy. And then Reese Olson's been out for quite a while. He's on a rehab, should be back next week. You know, who gets kicked out of the rotation in Detroit? You know, a lot of good arms. Obviously lost Jackson Jobe, Sawyer Gibson Long stay around, Keeter Montero. So, I mean, it will be interesting to see who kind of loses their spot there.
Yeah, Reese Olson, I think, one again, not a major injury there, the finger, and I think he's not available really in any leagues, but maybe he's hiding there in a 12-teamer. I think it'd be a good snag. Yu Darvish for the Padres, we've been waiting on him forever. I had him in a league where I just held him for a month, and finally I was like, you know what, whatever. If he does well, you know, enjoy on someone else's roster. But he has been throwing some simulation games. He is supposed to start a rehab assignment next week, yet some of the notes say that he might be back like next weekend or, you know, early July, which to me just, I don't know, sometimes it doesn't align the different things that you read, but just based on a timeline of, you know, I'm guessing he wouldn't make many rehab starts, but because he already has been making some, but like, you know, back in about, I don't know, maybe 10 days, 2 weeks, something like that makes sense. So I don't know if he's worth the stash, but worth a look at least, and to keep on top of the news there.
Yeah. They've had some pretty good fill-ins. Ryan, is it Bergit in San Diego? He's been really good.
Yeah. I mean, he's even in some, not especially great matchups. That this is a guy with, the Frenchish name and somebody I have just looked. So I don't know if it's Berger or Bergert or, so that's one I would have to check. Caught me by surprise there.
Ryan B.
Yeah. And then obviously Stephen Kolek has done a wonderful job as well. Max Scherzer, what do you think here? He had an excellent rehab start. He only went 4 1/3, but no runs, 8 Ks, kind of your typical Scherzer. He had typical Scherzer outing, but he had soreness on the thumb, which was expected. Is this a situation that you want to buy back in on, or are you kind of just afraid that it's just, hey, another start and then he's out again?
I'm interested at the right cost. Mad Max is a nut. So, you can see a little Ronnie Lott situation and, cut the tip off his thumb so he's able to pitch, just he's crazy like that. So, how long is he going to be effective? I don't know. But, I think when he gets out there, he's going to be effective. Can he go 5 innings? Can he get a win? We're all hurting for pitching. So I think he's definitely worth a shot until his thumb falls off.
A couple other guys, Shamania is supposed to be back soon from his oblique injury, has not pitched yet this year. A couple of guys that we're looking at in July, Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow, both Dodgers, both dealing with the shoulder inflammations there, both on similar time tracks there. Snell has been throwing bullpen sessions, as has Glasnow. Snell's have been around 20, 25 pitches on the last one. Glasnow is around 40. But Snell is, he's most likely, both are eligible or, should return like sometime around July 4th. I don't know, man. They might play it safe and keep them until after the All-Star break. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, the Dodgers might not have any pitchers by the playoffs, but they might have a full rotation. We don't know how this is going to work out, but both with shoulder inflammation, if I had to put a bet on, Glasnow is going to come back well before Blake Snell in this situation, just a gut feeling on that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And by the way, I guess this is more fab conversation, but might as well bring it up now since it's relevant. Emmett Sheehan came back from TJ, had the surprise move into the rotation. And I mean, it wasn't that surprise. It was either going to be this week or next week, but he made the start. It's 4 innings, was clean. He looked great, striking guys out. And then he's now back down to the minors. Is this temporary? Are we going to still consider bidding on him? Obviously he's no longer going to be this, massive target now that he's in the minors, but what's even going on there? Is it because Robleski had such a good, piggyback start after that?
It's a little confusing because they just went double bullpen game back to back, if I'm not mistaken on that. It's got to be just for depth in the bullpen. They're going to bring him back up. I think it might be an opportunity to get Sheehan a little cheaper, but time will tell. I don't love the fact they kind of sent him down right after that really good start. He looks like he definitely belongs in that rotation.
Yeah, I agree. You're right. That's a very good way to look at it. Possibly a deal, especially with people lower on money. So we'll see what transpires over the next few days. Any other of these pitchers, these guys that are on IL, anyone else intriguing to you? Anyone who we should just cut from our rosters if, in 12s or 15 teamers?
Tyler Molly is one that I let go last week and it was questionable. He's been amazing this year, but I think it was one of those things with the shoulder injury. You're probably looking, 4 to 6 weeks. And then he was getting really lucky as well. So he's somebody I let go. Someone I'm keeping a close eye on working his way back, Shane Bieber. He had a little setback, but I think he's back throwing again. So it'll be interesting his timeline. The guy knows how to pitch, and him in Cleveland should be kind of fun when he does come back. So anybody you are looking at dropping in your OCs?
I mean, I think if somebody had, I do not have these guys. I think if you have like a Michael King, for example, he's out until the All-Star break, this weird, pinch nerve thing. I mean, we've seen it before, not with him obviously, but he's out through the All-Star break, but I think that's a guy that you hold on to. Max Meyer seeing a hip specialist, where it seemed like he was on his way back and now we're not quite sure. I think that's, in a 15 teamer you hold, in a 12 team you can cut. And then Aaron Nola, that's one that is, you know, near and dear to many people's hearts because he's been a very reliable fantasy asset for so many years. But now he was put on the 60-day IL. Of course, that's, you know, it goes back to from the day of the injury. But he's been dealing with a couple issues there with the ankle and the ribs. But he is the earliest he can return is in about a month. So I don't know, you know, for me, if I had Nola, and again, I'm not a big Nola guy, I don't know if I would be holding on to him in a 12-team OC.
Yeah, and they have this guy named Andrew Painter who's supposed to be pretty good in the minors. At his timeline for getting back into the majors or in the rotation, they said, was July. So be interesting how they play that because they have a lot of good pitchers. You know, with Lizardo's recent struggles, it could be an IL stint for him to get Painter up at some point. But in a 12, Nola would definitely be on the drop list if I needed somebody to drop. But I'm not trying to drop him. In a guy I am dropping in the 12s is Tyler McGill, the baby goat. Great run. But when you got an elbow issue throwing that hard, it's just... You know, if he comes back and shoves, then he'll be on somebody else's team because I need that roster spot.
And Andrew Painter, I mean, the timeline for him was always going to be after the All-Star break. That's what they told us before the season. That's what they told us when he was brought up to AAA, you know, whatever it was a month and a half ago. And that's kind of the track that he's on. And so, you know, he has had, I guess, mixed results, which, you know, wouldn't be surprising considering he hadn't really pitched since 2022. But he's got an ERA of around 4.25. But the Ks and the walks look really good. A walk rate around 8%, strikeout rate between 26-27%. So I think once Andrew Painter comes up, like all rookies, a little some struggles, but overall, you know, he's better than McAbel, that's for sure. He's going to be really good, most likely better next year, but, you know, guy we're going to have to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Weekend matchups, and then we'll talk, wrap things up with a little bit of fab. This weekend, we've got the Arizona Diamondbacks in Coors. You got Corbin Carroll day to day. You got two lefties on the Rockies. So make sure you start Lourdes Gurriel Jr., usually hits higher in the lineup against lefties. And then, you got DCs, right? Do you have some Randall Grichuk action? Are we starting him this weekend?
He's a must start in my DCs this weekend in Colorado. When else are you going to play Randall Grichuk if you don't play him this weekend?
Yeah. Why even draft him if not for this? A's and the Guardians, they are in Sacramento this weekend.
There's going to be some balls flying out. It still hasn't got as hot. It was hot the last couple of days, but it cooled right back off. It's a little breezy today. So it'll be interesting how the park plays as it does heat up. But, you know, start all your righties for Cleveland because the A's got a couple lefties and that ballpark is a bandbox. So we might see some over-unders in the 11s come this weekend in Sacramento.
Yeah, and you just know it's going to be one of those weeks with, I mean, one of those weekends where all your random shares of Gabriel Arias and, you know, Angel Martinez and these guys just start going off. But always play all your guys in Sacramento. I picked up a guy I don't like this weekend in a main that's important to me, and it's Lane Thomas. So he stinks. I don't know why I did it, but hopefully he does something in Sactown this weekend.
Man, he must really hate Cleveland because he was pretty good in Washington before he got traded.
Dude, yeah. Maybe it's every other team, right? So they just need to trade him.
Get him out of there.
Yeah. And then finally, you got the Cardinals and the Reds. They're going to be playing in St. Louis this time, and they're likely going to face two lefties, Wade Miley and Andrew Abbott, who at this point would deserve NL Cy Young vote for how amazing he's been. Just a complete shock to me personally. But in general, like the Cardinals that struggle against lefties, it's Victor Scott, obviously. He's got a 50 WRC plus. Mason Wynn surprisingly hasn't been all that great against lefties so far this season. I think there's a 12 teamer where I might consider benching him. I mean, these are kind of the important decisions sometimes where we dig in and don't just be like, oh, Mason Wynn's been great. Oh, they're playing the Reds. I'm just going to start him. Like if you have maybe another middle infielder that maybe hasn't been as productive, but is maybe in a good ballpark or has good matchups or is playing bad pitching, you got to look into that. So that's one thing I want to warn people is to not be on autopilot with setting lineups. Go in, see how many lefties, righties, how these guys are doing against them, and then make your decision.
Yeah, there's many tools to see how your players have been playing too, not just the WRC plus. Even if you go on your NFBC team pages for player stats, you can cycle by last 7, last 14, last 28, and see how their stats have been. Because especially on 12 teams with names, Mason Wynn's a good example. It's easy, like Vlad said, just put on autopilot, and you are just teams are flying over you because they're maximizing stats. When guys are struggling, they're benching them and putting some, you know, no namer in there. Like our buddy Brandon Waddell, you know, picked up Ramon Laureano everywhere this week in 12th, and he has 5 RBIs already this week. So I just, you know, maximize at bats, maximize hot streaks, and keep going. Is Alec Burleson now playing against lefties for St. Louis?
I hadn't done St. Louis's lineups over the last couple of days. I think Burleson has been, they just haven't faced one since last weekend, but he was in the lineup. He's been in the lineup against lefties the last 3 times they faced him.
He's been mashing too, so he's kind of earning his spot back in there. And he was one of those guys with the really bad platoon splits against lefties last year. So I think Lars Nootmaar's kind of taken the brunt of that playing time because he's been really struggling.
Yep. Yeah, and it just kind of reminds me of how difficult the sport is, right? They're playing a full season, 162. Like, you can't just expect somebody to be, like, hot the whole time. Like, it's, okay, my boy is Nootbaar. He's not leading off anymore. Junghoo Lee isn't hitting, you know, second or third anymore. These guys are now falling lower in the lineup. Am I giving up on them? No. You know, Nootbaar had a couple of days off on, you know, this weekend. They said, hey, we'll meet you on Tuesday for the White Sox series or whatever it was. You know, meet us there. I think he already has homered since then. So, you know, he's hitting 5th or 7th. The guy's got a high walk rate. He'll work his way back up. There are lots of ebbs and flows. We can never be as low or as high as these guys are playing, like, over the last couple of days. Unless it's Joe Adell, then you just know. If he's going off, you know, he's going to continue to go off. And then as soon as he strikes cold, you just bench his ass.
Yeah, it's kind of back of the baseball card, right? At the end of the year, they're going to equal out to this. But, you know, if you ride that roller coaster with them, you can get a little seasick because there's a lot of good and a more bad than good.
All right, Fab look ahead, looking at the best matchups for week 14. So a lot of these great sort of, you know, ballpark situations where the A's are at home all week and the Rays are at home all week. It's not a very pretty schedule in week 14 because you've got, I believe, 6 teams that are playing 7 games, but the matchups are tough. It's like, you know, Braves versus the Mets, Mariners versus Minnesota. You're like very kind of pitching heavy, strong teams. And so a lot of those 7 gamers, sure, you'll play those guys for matchups, all your studs, but there aren't necessarily any strong schedules to take advantage of. The schedules to take advantage of actually all fall in for the NL West teams. So the way it shakes out is you got the Dodgers that are going to Coors Field for the first series, and they'll play at Kansas City, not necessarily the best set of matchups. Meanwhile, the Giants and the D-backs, they are swapping bad opponents. So the Giants play the Marlins while the D-backs play the White Sox, and then next weekend they swap. The Giants will play the White Sox, the D-backs will play the Marlins. So some good opportunities there for the hitters, and then also you know, for pitchers that are starting against them. Although the one thing I'll warn is that some of these White Sox pitchers have been actually pretty damn solid.
Yeah, none are on my fantasy teams though.
Not even Shane the Grain Smith?
Nope. Maybe Grant Taylor, moving forward, since we're going to get into Fab targets here, a future closer Grant Taylor on the White Sox.
Yes, they need a real guy that can close out games over there. So we already discussed Emmett Sheehan. Some of the other starting pitchers there in the mix. Michael McGreevy, are you a fan? I feel like everybody's a fan. And is he going to stick in this Cardinals rotation?
You know, I'm not a fan against the Cubs. The Cubs scare me this year. They're a stay-away team. So if I'm looking for some depth, he might be someone to pick up and stash. I don't really know what the Cardinals are doing, and I don't know if they know what they're doing with McGreevy. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, he's not someone that's a big target for me. the guy on the outline that I am a little more interested in and really struggled last start was Trevor Rogers. Now they back up with Baltimore. You know, he got rocked pretty good after getting that 8-run lead. But if he can stay up, velocity stays in the 92 to 93 rather than 90, 91, he can be effective. So I'll be keeping a close eye on him too.
Eric Lauer, by the way, for the Blue Jays, back in our lives, part of the Dom Smith, what's it, May Never Die Club. He is going to line up for a 2-start week against Cleveland and Boston. And, you know, he's coming off a great outing with 8 strikeouts, I believe 1 walk. And I don't know, just somebody to keep an eye on for or discuss or look into for the weekend. Of course, a lot of times that comes back as a huge trap. I like to look to see how those teams do against left-handed pitchers, maybe even some of the, you know, batter versus pitcher history there. And then Jansen Junk, the Junkmeister General. Let me go for cringe second time in one episode after I said Shane the Green Smith, which means absolutely nothing. What do we think about Junk?
You know, he's been really good and really usable because he doing that follower role where he's, you know, pitching the second or third inning after somebody pitches the first two. A lot of strikeouts. He's with a bad team, so the win percentage isn't great. But, you know, being a follower definitely raises that because you don't need to go 5 innings to get that win. So he's definitely a person of interest for this weekend for me.
And then on the hitter side, you got Roddy Tellez, sneaky home run hitters already in the double digits. The Mariners are likely going to face 6 of 7 right-handers if everything holds up for the schedule. Garrett Mitchell, you got in AAA. And then I do have to bring up Michael Toglia because I don't want people to think that I'm being sneaky because I did get him on an NFBC main event team. And it was one of those last minute, like, you know, we put out the Sunday update. I even told, you know, a couple people in the chat, you know, Jordan Walker is somebody now that I'm looking at. And then as I'm scrambling the last half an hour to get my bids in, as I'm always behind, I click in on corner infielders. I'm like, oh, Toglia, let me see what he's up to. Look him up in the minors. He's not doing much, doing exactly what he always does. Hits home runs and strikes out and like at a 35% clip. Threw him in on a couple of bids, ended up getting him. And I'm like, wait a second. Who are the first basemen there? Like, who's playing first base now? Is it really still Keston Hiura and, you know, Kyle Farmer? That's not going to last long. That night I did a podcast with Scott Jenstad. We talked about Toglia. Wake up in the morning. Oh, Toglia is coming to the Rockies. And then 3 home runs later. I mean, you know, sometimes things just happen. Sometimes you get lucky.
Sneaky settler. There's no luck involved there. That is all skill, but it's a great call. When you're looking at guys in the minors, they might not be doing great, but if they have the skills, look who's in front of them and who's holding them back, because it's just a matter of time before they're coming up usually. So it is a little luck, like you said, but it was kind of a planned opportunistic luck, we'll call it.
Yeah. I mean, the other guy, I mean, Mickey Moniak was another, it was actually a kind of decent, you know, weekend of fab recommendations. So Cam Smith is off to a very nice week. Mickey Moniak as well. A lot of it's just like schedule based, to be honest. It's just, you look at it like, oh, they are playing a bunch of bad Washington National righties who are struggling. Let's do it. And then, you know, same thing with Cam Smith, or hey, they're going to face the A's in Sacramento. Like, it's just, you know, starting to heat up, makes sense. So those are really kind of the reasons for those guys. It wasn't really like overthinking or rocket science. It's just like, hey, these are the matchups.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you, you have any Jurickson and Profar interest coming back off suspension July 2nd? I think he's able to start a minor league rehab assignment this week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, last week would have been a good week to get him. And I know a lot of teams did. You know, I've kind of grown on the idea over, you know, the last few days just because, hey, it's going to be on Atlanta. And listen, hey, maybe he gets to hit higher up in the lineup, right? I mean, this is a guy that scored 90 plus runs last season for the Padres. So yeah, I'm absolutely open for that.
Yeah. And probably the big fab get this week is Brady House on the Nationals. The third base, I slotted in immediately, batting 5th. A lot of power, a lot of swing and miss. Any thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's here. I don't see any reason why he might go down, although we've said that a million times over the last few years because that's how it is with prospects. You just really never know. But it does seem like he has a home there. Hopefully it's not Carter Kieboom part two, and he just kind of sticks a third here for the Nationals and makes it happen. Or was it Spencer Kieboom? I always forget which Kieboom brother was the catcher and who was the Nationals bust prospect.
I want to say Carter was the bust prospect, and I was not expecting to get a Carter Kieboom reference tonight. So kudos to you.
Yeah, neither was I. It just came to my head. Let's end these with the show here today with a couple of 12 team targets because I want to get your opinion. The ever tilting, tilt worthy Eduardo Rodriguez of the Arizona Cardinals. He is one of the aforementioned lovely matchups for an NL West team this week. He's going to get the White Sox on Monday and then the Marlins on the weekend. Are you open to that? The lefty there. And then Justin Verlander, the same mix, but Marlins and then White Sox. Did you watch his last start? And what do you think about him in 15s, really, if he's available?
Eduardo Rodriguez, I'm taking the chance on because the strikeout upside, as well as being on Arizona, it is tilting, and there's just as good of a chance you're getting, 10 earned runs as you are 10 strikeouts with him. But, you got to maximize in the 12s. Verlander, the strikeout stuff just doesn't seem to be there. Watching him give a opposite field home run to Daniel Schneeman in San Francisco was not very comforting as a Giants fan. I'll definitely be looking at it. I will be prioritizing E-Rod over Verlander in the bids, though.
Yeah, same here. I think a healthy E-Rod could be fine. I think we just also need to sort of pick our spots for him, especially teams that crush lefties and hit bombs off of them. So not starting him in Yankee Stadium, but White Sox, Marlins, I can get behind that. Verlander, I don't think I can. He might escape from these two, but from what I saw, giving up all those hits, I understand just his first start back. I do not trust him to stay healthy very long. And by the way, the guy that we were talking about, Emmett Sheehan, when he was demoted, even though it might be temporary, it was for a guy named Jack Little, reliever, who, as we're recording here, came up to make his MLB debut. And who's he up against? Luis Arraez. What happens? First pitch, boom, hits it in the corner, triple for Arraez. And welcome to the big leagues, brother.
It never fails, right? Not a guy you're going to want to face your first batter.
Yeah, and man, Yamamoto just continues to never get run support. It's pretty crazy. I mean, he lasted 7 innings, looked well, but they're down 3-0 here. What a grind this division is. This is going to be fun. Where you feel good about the Giants getting in the playoffs and then over the Padres?
A lot of it depends on the health of the pitching because their offense is going to be much improved. I don't think Buster is done making moves with the Giants as far as maybe a second baseman or a right fielder. He's going to, add on to that good bullpen, but he's not just going to stop at Devers, and which I really like. He kind of is modeling himself after Brian Sabian, who was his GM when he was playing. But I'm excited about the Giants. Confident? No. I'm confident the Dodgers will be in the playoffs, and I'm confident the Dodgers are going to be the betting favorite to win the division. And if I was a betting man, I would put money on them. But their pitching issues, as far as just a baseball fan, do scare the crap out of me to see how far the Dodgers can go.
Yeah, we are getting really close here to the halfway point of the MLB season. And that's going to come a little bit, obviously, before the All-Star break, as it usually does. Then, of course, we'll have the All-Star break. Nice time to kind of rejuvenate. There's still a lot of fab left, a lot of lineups to set, a lot of things that can happen. So do not give up. Continue to step back on your bids after you've set them. Like, use your time management wisely on the weekend. Step back and then go back to it. A lot of times you get a chance to lower your bids. I think it really makes a big difference because you're going to want those dollars there towards the end if you're competing in September.
Yeah, every dollar matters. And, especially in the OCs, when you get about half the league kind of turns to football or, stops paying attention, that you really can maximize those last couple of dollars. So it never seems to work when you raise your bid the last 20 minutes before Fab, but yeah. It's worked a couple of times lowering it. So, to get away from that urge of going higher and getting that FOMO of missing out, because your original gut feeling's usually right. But if you feel like you need to lower it, that's something I'm all for, to be more, optimize your bids.
100%. Trust that original gut. There it is. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you get a chance, please subscribe to the pod, rate, review it. We will be back next week. And here we go. Middle of the season. We are almost there. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.